meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon, and welcome to Winds of Change. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it's my privilege to be sitting in once again here for Father Anthony on Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. And to start off our week this week, we wanted to give you a story that would inspire you, that would touch you, that would make you want to know how you could do more to help and assist and accompany those smallest among us who don't have anyone to grieve them to the point that when they die, they don't have anyone to provide a funeral for them. And I'm talking about an organization called Rest in His Arms. And it is my great pleasure to have with me here in the studio today, Susan Walker, who is the founder of Rest in His Arms. Susan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here, Mary.
It's such a privilege to have you here with us, Susan. And I have long, from afar, been one of your admirers of your good work because you really take the corporal works of mercy and put a human face on them. And I mean that quite literally, and in particular, the work of mercy to bury the dead. So why don't you start, for people who are unfamiliar with you and your organization, tell us about how you came to found it and what Rest in His Arms does.
Thank you. Rest in His Arms is an organization that was founded to provide Catholic funeral and burial for babies who have been abandoned or unclaimed at the morgue. And we were founded back in 2005. Mary, it all started with a newspaper article in the Chicago Tribune. There was a small article on the fifth page of the Metro section about the body of a baby that had been found in a landfill up in Grays Lake, up in Lake County. Oh. And I had my own toddler at my feet playing at that time, and yeah, I was just crying and grieving the loss of this baby,
right,
with my own child happily giggling and playing. And I felt like I was supposed to do something, but I wasn't sure what that was.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut the article out of the Tribune and carried it around to work with me for 4 days. And finally, on Friday of that week, I found myself on the telephone in one of those surreal phone calls where words were coming out of my mouth and I wasn't really sure what I was saying.
Someone else was prompting you, right?
Yes. I was asking the Lake County Sheriff if I could provide a funeral and burial for this baby that I didn't know.
Uh-huh. And was that Mark Curran at the time? Was he the sheriff in Lake County
Yes,
at the time?
That's
so, okay.
Yep. Yes. And it ended up that two wonderful sheriff's deputies came to my home that night and did a DNA swab to make sure I wasn't the baby's mother.
Oh.
And once I was cleared, I was allowed to work with the coroner's office to plan a funeral for this baby that I didn't know.
Right. No one claimed.
Right.
Yeah.
We knew nothing about him. I didn't even know at the time if it was a boy or a girl. I just knew there was a baby that needed someone.
So let's start from that first funeral that you organized for this child. I assume you gave the child a name.
I did.
And then what did you name him?
Well, the state was going to name him Baby Doe and bury him like that. And I was able to work with the coroner to say, you know, as people of faith, names are important. That's how God calls us. And this child needs a name.
Right.
So I named him Michael Gerard.
That's beautiful.
I thought naming him after one of the greatest archangels.
Right.
And then with St. Gerard Majella as his patron, that he would be well protected and well cared for in heaven.
And St. Gerard Majella, listeners, is the patron saint of mothers in difficult pregnancies or mothers who are having trouble conceiving. So one can imagine if a mother placed her own child in a landfill, it must have been a mother who was under great emotional distress in some way. One prays that that was the case. And So you started with this one funeral, and where was that held, and how did you arrange for the casket and the burial? Did you work with your local parish?
At that point in time, I really wasn't too sure of what I was doing. I was working with the coroner's office, and we were able to call a funeral home up in Grays Lake who donated their services, and were able to work with the community to donate a plot at Avon Cemetery in Grays Lake.
Okay.
We had about 75 complete and total strangers come to this little guy's funeral.
Wow.
It was very beautiful. And we left him with a little teddy bear, and I got to sing him a lullaby and let him know that he was loved and he would be mine.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it reminds me of a couple of different things. First of all, I had a conversation with David DeLeiden, who is the person from the pro-life movement who was behind the undercover videos at Planned Parenthood. And I asked him, because, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar, he's actually inside the Planned Parenthood clinics negotiating the sale of these fetal remains for stem cell companies who wanted intact fetal remains for research. And, you know, I said to him, you know, I don't know that I could have stood there and pretended in the way you did. You know, I said, I would have been like, I would be the worst undercover person in like the entire world, because I would have lasted about 9 seconds before I either started screaming at them or burst into tears, one or probably both. And I said, you know, how on earth did you do it? And he said, you know, he went back to something St. John Paul II said about people who do, say, for example, prayerful witness in front of abortion clinics. And like, what's the point of doing this? You know what I mean? Like and St. John Paul II had said, at least what you are doing is being one person who loved that person, even if it was only for a couple of minutes. And he said, I was the person in the room. And he said, I felt it was my obligation. And I would actively look at these children who were in pans at this point and say, one person loved you here on this earth. One person was here who loved you. And so I thought very much of that when I was, you know, reading some background on your organization when I was preparing today. And then, but I also thought of St. Teresa of Calcutta, Mother Teresa, who was one time criticized for pulling a person out of the gutter and who was covered in maggots, and she cleaned him, and she and the sisters got fresh linens and put him in a clean bed, and et cetera, et cetera. And he died, I think, 15 minutes after they put him in the bed. And someone had commented, you know, maybe you should have just taken them, you know, straight. Why did you go to all that trouble? Why didn't you just take? And she said, no, she said it was important even for that 15 minutes that he felt that someone respected him and loved him. So you kind of combine those two things, you know, and kind of hearkening back to the gospel story where you know, the Lord chastises the apostles for criticizing Mary Magdalene for using that expensive oil to anoint his feet, right? It wasn't a waste. And so any of this, even though these babies are unclaimed and unknown, God knows their value. And
that's
I think that's the witness that we're giving ultimately, isn't it?
Right. It's never a waste to restore that little bit of dignity, to show the world that even if this baby only lived for a couple of seconds, that they're a precious child of God and their life has meaning and unbelievable dignity and worth and value.
Right. And you know, in a time too, I mean, this is the other interesting kind of piece of what you're doing is that you are drawing attention to the importance of a proper funeral. And, you know, in this day and age, and I have seen this, you know, I have a number of priest friends from, you know, my former job with the Archdiocese, and many of them comment on how they're seeing fewer and fewer and fewer funerals. And it's not because there are fewer people dying. I mean, people are dying at the same rate they were, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. It's that there seems to be sort of a sense now, particularly if you have older people and they have, you know, kids in their 30s and 40s who have abandoned the faith or they're just not regular practitioners, that the whole funeral mass and the wake and the burial are just sort of, you know, wastes of time and money. They're old fashioned things that there's not, you know, and so the priests are saying it's becoming increasingly alarming to them, the number of people who don't see the value in doing a wake or a funeral or a proper Christian burial. And I know of one case where I know a family, and the eldest child was made the executor of the parents' estate, and the father died, and he had the father cremated, and the father has been cremated and is sitting on a mantle in the house.
Oh, no.
They think, And this was a person who was a practicing, you know, fairly practicing Catholic. No wake, no funeral, no mass, no burial, just cremated and put on a shelf. And, you know, and when the brother said, Dad would not have wanted this. He would have wanted a funeral mass. He said, oh, well, we'll do a lunch or something on his birthday. That was the response.
Gosh.
And this, and most of the family thought this was perfectly fine, that people just don't do funerals anymore. So can you speak a little bit to that, about the importance of
these
rituals?
Yes, it's the greatest gift the Catholic Church can offer.
Mm-hmm. Prayers for the dead.
Yes. We're under the impression that most of these children probably were not baptized. They would have been if they were mine, and they're my children now. And as a practicing Catholic, I have a right to ask for a funeral mass for my child. Mm-hmm. And so we have found that parishes all throughout Lake County and Cook County, and even in the Rockford Diocese, have been very receptive to holding the funeral masses for these babies and being able to pray for their souls and being able to pray for the parents, too. Like you said, we do believe that these were parents that were under dire mm-hmm. situations.
Yeah, you would
that,
have to be. You would have to be to do something like that.
And so
yeah.
being able to offer that funeral mass is really something very important. Not too long after baby Michael's funeral, we were called again by the Lake County coroner that there were two more children and would we help?
Wow.
And
where were those children found? I hate to go into gory details, but I think it's important for people to know when these things happen and how they happen. The details are horrid, but I think they're important for people to hear.
Baby David had been found in a dumpster behind a Dominick's grocery store in Round Lake in 2001 mm-hmm. and had been left in the morgue then for almost 5 years.
And no one could claim
him. Nobody had claimed him. And baby Rosa had been put into a trash bag and left in a closet in an apartment in Waukegan in 2002. And again, nobody had claimed her for almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. So their funerals were held in early 2006.
And how old would they have been? Was the coroner able to estimate the age of these children?
That they were both newborns.
Newborns, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. Now, this is about where we first met Mary.
Right.
I had sent a letter to the cardinal's office saying, how can I get some burial plots that are together for infants at a cemetery? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer at that time from Catholic cemeteries was, is this lady a little crazy? Well, why do you want a bunch of plots that are all together?
Right.
What are you doing exactly?
Right.
And it was your involvement in letting Cardinal George know who we were and what we were about and what we were trying to do that really made an impact, because he was able to then work with the folks from the Catholic Cemeteries Association who donated 48 plots at All Saints Cemetery so we can keep our babies together.
No, I have to say Catholic cemeteries, when I for many years worked at the Archdiocese, anytime we had a stillborn or a miscarried child for whom the parents could not afford a proper burial or a casket, there was one person who I would call there and say, I have this family, can you help me? And within 2 or 3 hours, I would have a casket, I would have a burial. You know, they were never anything but incredibly responsive. And I think now asking for 48 graves at the same time, it was a bit of an unusual request. And I'm glad that they did call to check it out. But no, it was my privilege to be able to meet you and to help you at that time, Susan. And, you know, of course, Queen of Heaven Cemetery in Hillside is also where there is a large grave for the remains of aborted children.
Yes.
So these are babies that were found in dumpsters in back of abortion facilities in the late 70s and early 80s that some people in the pro-life community had gone to in a similar way you did, you know, would rescue the remains because they thought at least at a minimum these kids deserved to have a proper burial. And Cardinal Bernardine, you know, arranged for one because of the state of the remains at that point. It wasn't possible to do individual graves and burials, but for one mass grave for the children's remains, and actually went out there and there was a proper funeral mass for them as a group. And their souls were commended to our Lord and to his mercy. And many people still go there and use that as a site for prayer.
And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that, you know, our faith is so deep and so rich that we entrust these children to the mercy of a very loving father that, you know, we don't know. We don't mm-hmm. really know where they're at or what the final end is for them. But we know that they're with a loving God. And that was how the name of our organization came to be. As I prayed over, Lord, what do you ask me to do here.
Right.
The idea, they're resting in my arms. You don't need to worry about a thing. You just need to do what I'm telling you to do because they're resting in my arms. Right. I have them and I love them and they're with me.
Well, you know, I can't think of a better note on which to end this first segment. And we're going to go into our break now. But listeners, please do stay tuned for the continuation of my conversation with Susan Walker of Rest in His Arms. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration on Sunday, December 10th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Then, on Tuesday, December 12th, on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, starting early at 5 a.m., Mañanitas, the serenading of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Then, at 7 p.m., there will be a special Mass in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Following the Mass, the celebration will continue in the St. Stanislaus Kostka School Gym at 1255 North Noble Street. There will be a folklore and Aztec dance presentation, as well as the presentation of the story of the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, of course, there'll be food for sale. Tamales, pozole, sopes, Mexican-style hot chocolate, and much, much more. The funds raised will benefit St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. That's Saturday, December 10th. St. Stan's is located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join in our celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, two blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. I am joined today by Susan Walker, who is the founder and president of Rest in His Arms, which is a ministry that provides Christian burial and a funeral mass for children who have been abandoned. And Susan was telling us before the break about the first three funerals, one for a baby found in a dumpster, one for a baby found in a landfill, and then
one left in a plastic bag in an apartment. Yes.
So over, since Susan founded this organization in 2005, she has assisted in the burial of 41 babies. Have they all been infants, or do you've had some toddlers in the group as well?
We have had some toddlers, yes.
Yeah. So, yes. I know you don't have an age limit on an abandoned child for burial. I know you will help in any way you're asked, but... So you've had 41 children in these past 12 years or so, and of all those, and I know obviously, in the same way, every child is unique and special and beautiful. Every one of these services that you've had would be equally special and beautiful. But among all of those, is there one or two that stand out to you as really that just powerful in a particular way? And can you share that with us?
We have had burials and funerals for 8 children so far this year.
8 this year?
8 this year. The most recent one was on October 3rd, and that was held at St. Patrick's Parish in McHenry, which is in the Rockford Diocese.
Okay.
One of the children we were able to name, baby John Patrick, he had been waiting for us for 25 years.
Okay, so where were his remains found then? Was he in the morgue?
He had been waiting in the morgue. He was found in a women's restroom at a Wags restaurant in Crystal Lake 25 years ago. So long ago, Wags restaurants don't exist anymore.
Right. Yeah, I think I remember Wags, but that is going back sometime. Yeah.
And he had been waiting in the morgue. A new coroner came in who happens to be Catholic and called us and said, "My golly, I've found human remains. I found the remains of a baby, and will you help?" And
so were the remains just found? But he's actually been in the morgue for these. The remains had been found in a restaurant and had just been waiting in the morgue to be claimed.
That's correct.
Right. And so is that what happens if no one claims you? You just are in the morgue for eternity? Or I seem to remember.
Generally, no. Yeah. There have been laws passed more recently that really require the counties to take responsibility for those remains and make sure that people are buried. It's a little different when it's an infant.
Right.
Sometimes the remains are so tiny that they are left sitting with the hopes that somebody's going to come back for them.
And sometimes, too, my guess is they're trying to, if they believe that there was the parents were the cause of the death.
Right.
They need to keep the child's remains as
for homicide investigations.
Yeah, right.
And yes.
Right.
Yes.
That makes sense to me. And from that perspective, but after 25 years, you would think it's probably one of those things where it's not going to, you know, you may never know who that child's parents were.
Right. Right. I think one of the things that was hardest about that was knowing it had been 25 years. And every time I would see a young man on the street, I'd go, that could have been baby John Patrick. That could have been him.
Right.
And what made the funeral even more difficult was there were four other children that had also been in the morgue for more than a decade.
My goodness.
So there were five babies that were buried together that day. It was truly, truly heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It was an absolutely beautiful funeral mass, the best that could have ever been offered, but it was so difficult knowing that these lives were really truly discarded and then forgotten about for such a long time.
Right. And you know, there's certainly plenty of tension to plenty of bad things that happen in the world, but it doesn't seem to me that you get a tremendous amount of media scrutiny about these kind of cases. They seem to be kind of, it's almost sort of commonplace, isn't it?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, so you've had how many in so far this year?
We've had eight children.
Yeah.
Yes. So the one that had occurred just before that was in September. Mm-hmm. We had a funeral for two little baby girls.
Okay.
And
now, that's the one I remember. I saw, I read about this in the Chicago Tribune. Tell us a little bit about that circumstance.
Sure. There was a brand new baby girl who had been thrown out of an eighth floor apartment window in Chicago in the Uptown neighborhood 2 years ago in November of 2015.
Wow.
Her mother was found and did serve time in jail,
okay,
but the baby was left unclaimed.
Mm.
So once the homicide investigation was finished, she was released to us, and we were able to name her Mariam. We were trying to honor her roots and her heritage, her Pakistani roots. We named her Mariam Jane. And we had her funeral along with another little girl named Aria Michaela. Aria had been also left in a plastic garbage bag and found in a shed in South Suburban Dalton.
Mm.
And that was just this past summer back in June.
And were Aria's parents located?
Not yet.
Yeah.
No.
But like even with Miriam, with baby Miriam, whose mother was discovered and whose family then clearly knew she existed still, even still, no family member came to claim her body.
They did not.
No. That's, yeah. And so
now
tell me, like, when you, I know I saw that in the Tribune and you had let me know, so I let my Facebook friends know that you were going to be having this funeral and that you were, you know, hoping that others would join you in prayer and in presence there. How many people would you say on average you get to one of the funerals for the children?
I think several hundred people tend to come, which is really wonderful. The Knights of Columbus Fourth Degree provide an honor guard.
So isn't that beautiful?
We get a beautiful, fabulous honor guard that shows the dignity and value of these VIPs. My babies become VIPs.
Right.
And that's really special. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And then when we do have the funerals at my home parish, which is St. Mary's in Buffalo Grove, our priests invite the entire congregation to attend.
Oh, that's good.
The weekend before, they'll explain that it's not just an invitation, but an obligation to come and pray for the dead.
Right.
And that they're expected to be there, the way our pastor says it, which is really beautiful. So a number of my friends from the parish will come as well.
Well, you know, and that kind of harkens back to what I was saying, you know, earlier when so many priests I know are really concerned about the number of people who don't realize that you know, a funeral mass is really an obligation, and it is, it's a corporate work of mercy to attend a wake or a funeral when someone you know dies. And I think we have sort of come to the point where many, especially many younger people who weren't really raised with proper, you know, wake and funeral etiquette think, you know, you just post a condolence on Facebook and you've done your job. And funerals are becoming these sort of small private events, and they're just simply not seen as the community events that they really should be.
Right. And we do try to get the media involved. We do send out press releases. We would like the public to be able to come and mourn the loss and to really experience what one of these funerals is like, that these children are very, very much loved, at least in death, and that they get these great prayers of the church.
Yeah. And so you began this ministry. You've now buried 41 children. Tell me, obviously, this isn't free. You obviously need to raise some funds to be able to. I mean, this is,
yes.
Well, you know, this is how people can, who can't do what you're doing, can nonetheless be part of what you're doing because,
yes.
You know, I'm sorry, nothing in life is free. So I know you've had the plots donated, but there's other expenses that go along with the funerals. Anyone who's ever planned a funeral knows. And so tell us a little bit about that and how you raise your money, Susan, and then what the funds are used for.
Okay. Well, I think I should tell you, too, that this ministry is something that actually makes me proud to be a Catholic. And I know some of my friends have said that as well, when they hear about just how God has put things in a certain order to make things happen in a certain way. I live about a mile from one of the greatest mortuary colleges in the entire country.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm,
no, see,
I'm very
is,
close to Worsham Mortuary College.
Oh, see, now I don't know much about mortuary science. So tell me, what's the name of the school?
Worsham. Mortuary College in Wheeling.
Okay.
Yes. They have been fabulous with helping us and with trying to educate the students then with needing to give back to the community.
Oh,
so
beautiful.
These are not necessarily Christian people at all, but just people that are being trained in the sciences and educated that we have an obligation to help those in need.
Right. And that treating human remains with dignity is also part of
yes.
know, what we do as a human community. I know for, you know, I have a friend who works at Loyola's medical school who was telling me when they receive, you know, people who have donated their bodies to science. And he said, when we receive those bodies, we have a blessing ceremony and we bless the bodies and the students are taught in no uncertain terms that the human remains they are working on are always to be treated with the utmost respect.
Yes. Yes. And so we find that, too, in these students. And they mm-hmm. tend to come to the funerals where it's possible. They're able to serve
Isn't
as pallbearers and to help prepare
really?
The children. Yes. And then there is a Catholic funeral home in Arlington Heights, Glickert's Funeral Home. And the owner, John, is a member of St. James Parish in mm-hmm. Arlington Heights and also a member of the Knights of Columbus.
Marvelous.
He works quietly behind the scenes. He'd be really irritated that I'm mentioning his name right now, but I think he deserves it.
No, absolutely. No,
he
people
goes
should know.
That out
they, these
of his
are the,
way.
Right. These
yeah.
are the kind of businesses that you want to patronize if you're, you know, you ever find yourself in need of a funeral home, to know that, you know, your family will be treated as if it's the only family in the world that's ever lost someone. And
yes.
it's good to know that you're supporting a business that shares your values.
And John has told us to always say yes, and then we'll figure things out on yeah. the backside.
Wow.
So even when we were taking care of those five babies, he said, just say yes. We'll figure out how to do it. Just
okay.
say yes.
Okay.
So he has really made it easy for our ministry to continue to do what we do and
okay.
to continue to love these babies.
So obviously you need money to give the funeral home something, right? I mean, they obviously donate a significant portion
they do.
Of
they
their
do.
Services, but you give them something because then they have obviously their own out-of-pocket costs. And then I guess there would be other fees associated with
right.
the burial and
yes, and even at church, all of the priests have always donated their services, of course. But we'd like to be able to give them a little stipend or a little gift of
right.
some kind as a thank you.
And to the music
and
minister.
The music minister right. and the person who was the bereavement coordinator and helped to plan the liturgy.
Right.
None of them will take anything, so we like to put something in an envelope and mail it to them afterwards
yeah.
as a thank you.
Right. Well, no, it is important that you thank people, and
right.
no one's in this to make money, right? But thing, you know, life costs money sometimes, and so that's very helpful to know. You know, it's there are just the attendant costs, and you don't want to put anyone else on the spot necessarily to donate their services, right?
Right.
So
I
think that's, you know, you're going into it with the right attitude that you will obviously compensate people for their time or their trouble or, you know, any additional effort that they put forth in service to these children. And, you know, you want them to have flowers, like,
yes,
you know,
right.
I mean, again, for children who lived very short lives without much love, you know, at least here's a moment like St. John Paul II where you can show them that, you know, you want to be that loving presence.
Right.
So if people want to support you, where do they go?
We would be so grateful. We're on Facebook.
Okay.
At Rest in His Arms.
Okay.
And we're also on the web at www.restinhisarms.org.
Okay. And so other than, I know the Knights of Columbus have been supportive, and
yes,
Catholic Cemeteries has been incredibly supportive, and Gluckert's Funeral Home. Is there anybody else you would like to?
Yes, Bevel Granite Company in Marionette Park.
Oh, no, I see. I didn't even think of this. Monuments.
They donate
every single headstone.
They donate them all. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Well, see, you know, people are so good. And I think when, you know, we were talking before the show began, listeners, that you know, Susan and I were saying that this is one issue that seems to really unite people, and that everyone, when faced with, you know, the remains of a dead child, it just calls out the best in everyone, doesn't it? Because
yes,
I think, you know, you just see the gravity of the injustice against this child. And, you know, again, people are, I think, at their base and at their core, good people, and they want to be able to assist you. Well, we'll continue our conversation with Susan Walker about her beautiful ministry at Rest in His Arms when we return from our break. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Do you know what the Christmas spirit is? Some say the Christmas spirit is a feeling of love, joy, and peace that comes this time each year. You know, it's not a bad answer. It's just incomplete. The Christmas spirit is the living presence of the third member of the Trinity, the Holy Spirit, actively animating and perfecting the lives of Christians. In fact, the love, joy, and peace that we associate with the Christmas spirit are what St. Paul calls the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Many wish the Christmas spirit could be with us all year round. Well, I've got news for you. It can. Why do you think I'm so jolly? So even long after the Christmas decorations are stored away, our hearts can be filled 365 days with the same love, joy, and peace that the angels proclaimed to the shepherds, if we are open to the power of the Holy Spirit, the true Christmas spirit. For Christ is born, glorify Him.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to Christmas on the Prairie. Come and hear the story of the real St. Nicholas and take a ride with him in his own horse-drawn carriage.
Saturday evening, December 2nd, from 2 to 6 p.m., an indoor and outdoor family event. Experience the beauty of a Byzantine church, and homemade Christmas bake sale items are available. Christmas on the Prairie at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road in Homer Glen, Illinois. Saturday, December 2nd, from 2 to 6 p.m.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony on listener-supported Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have been joined in the last half hour by Susan Walker, who is the president and founder of Rest in His Arms Ministry, who are charged with taking the human remains of infants who are abandoned, infants and toddlers, and providing them with a casket and a Christian funeral and a headstone even and a proper burial. And Susan and I have been talking about how so many in the community who provide funeral services have come together to assist her. In the last 12 years, she's buried 41 children who have either been who have been abandoned and either found or left, whose remains have been left in the morgue. And now, you know, I think for so many people, you know, we think, why on earth would a mother or a father abandon their child's remains? And it strikes at the heart to think of this little baby being left somewhere. And the Illinois General Assembly sought to try to curb and to stem some of these instances by passing something called the Safe Haven Law. Can you talk a little bit about that law, what
yes,
it does?
Oh, I'd love to. Yes. Rest in His Arms is probably the only organization that you've ever heard of whose goal is to go out of business. We don't want to ever have another funeral. Of course we will, as long as there's a need. But we really work very, very diligently with an organization called the Save Abandoned Babies Foundation to try to educate the public about the Safe Haven Law. The Safe Haven Law in Illinois allows a parent in crisis to leave an unharmed newborn up to 30 days old in the arms of staff at any fire station, police station, hospital, 24-hour emergency medical center, and now also on campus security offices on college and university campuses.
Oh, excellent. I didn't know about that update. That is terrific. So, so if you have a newborn 30 days old or less, you can walk into a police station, a fire station, a hospital, any kind of 24-hour urgent care center, or a campus security office on a university or college, and simply hand the newborn, no questions asked.
No questions asked. You just need to place the baby in the arms of a staff person. It doesn't matter who the staff person is. There are no questions asked. It is totally safe, totally free, totally legal, totally anonymous, and nobody's going to follow that mother out to see who they were or follow them to their car. What they're going to do instead is take care of that baby. So they will take custody of the baby, make sure that the baby receives emergency medical treatment, and then that child goes immediately into a forever family. There's no foster care. They go immediately into the adoption system.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so, you know, I think the important distinction here is that the child can't be left in a basket on a doorstep. You must place the child in another person's arms.
That's correct. But, and in Illinois, churches are not safe havens.
I know that.
And the reason for that, unfortunately, is some of our pastors have more than one parish. They're not home 24/7. There's not always somebody there.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that the baby is left with someone so that we know they're not left out in the elements.
Right. You have to put them the child in a place where the child can be immediately cared for and not left exactly as you mentioned in the elements. There was one case I remember very well in Chicago where we had an unborn child, not an unborn child, pardon me, a newly born child who was left, you know, in a car seat and warm, I mean, with a little bottle. And I mean, so the mother clearly had the intention of the child not being harmed and left in the vestibule of one of our parishes. And the priest who happened to be working there had been like an army medic and a nurse in the army. So he knew exactly what to do, but he said he was he said he ran with that baby into the rectory to make sure that it was okay while he was, you know, having parishioners call 911 for him. But he said if that baby had been dropped off 2 hours earlier, 2 hours later, nobody would have been there in that church for 48 hours. And he said, you know, that's why that safe haven law is designed the way it is.
Yes.
And I'm so glad, though, to hear about the addition of the college campus. That was a really, because, you know, I remember from a situation when I was in college where somebody had a baby in the bathroom. And unfortunately, that baby did not make it. Yeah, it was, but she was terrified. And, you know, again, to look with compassion and mercy on, you know, what is probably a terrified young mother. And think of what that must be like to have a baby by yourself in your dorm bathroom, you know, in your communal dorm stall. And
I can't even imagine
how frightening that must be. Right. And the safe haven law has been in force for how long in
Since
Illinois?
Since 2001.
Wow. Oh,
yes.
Good.
So its intention is to end the crisis and keep the baby safe.
Right.
And in that time, since the law has been in effect, there have been of 121 babies that have been saved. 121 tiny little lives that have been saved.
Wow.
So the oldest safe haven children are 16 years old right now.
Oh, that's marvelous.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think for the one thing that we could all do as a community is to promote what the safe haven law is and to let people know about it. Now, I thought I knew everything I needed to know about safe haven, and you've educated me today.
Thank you. Oh, I'm glad.
Can you suggest ways to people that using social media or whatever connections that you can talk about, how you can help just educate other people about the safe haven law?
Sure. We do recommend going on to the internet, going on to either Facebook or out to the Save Abandoned Babies Foundation website. There is an entire page of resources, and to share any of those, there's some public service announcements. You can copy and paste and share it right onto any type of social
media. Right.
We recommend even now, as people are listening to us talk, pull out your smartphone and send a message, send a text message to the first couple of people that are in your contact list and ask them, have you ever heard about the safe haven law?
Mm-hmm.
Just get a conversation going. Ask your children tonight at dinner.
Right.
Part of the law in Illinois also requires that every public junior and senior high school in the state that has a health ed curriculum has to teach the children about the law.
Oh, that's excellent.
It excludes every private school and every Catholic school.
Okay, that's odd. Now, why do you think it excludes that?
Part of that, I think, is just because they don't want to dictate curriculum to the private schools.
And sometimes I know in the public school, the health curriculums can be a little dicey in terms of the materials that are provided. And so while certainly we teach biology and health to students, we would not incorporate some of the things that, for example, you know, Planned Parenthood has managed to work into the curriculum, right? So perhaps it's for that reason. But certainly, I think this is a particular law that any certainly any Catholic school could support.
Yes,
and yeah,
and
I mean,
we're available to speak at any Catholic school that would like us there.
Well, that's
so
very good. You may regret saying that because lots of people are listening, and you may
no,
very
we would
well
love
get
that.
But that is a marvelous thing because I really do think when especially when high school juniors and seniors are doing their, I know at many Catholic schools they have days of reflection or they have educational days where you might get a whole variety of speakers. You know, people from Aid for Women, which is a pregnancy center to let students know, no, there are places you can go if you want to continue your pregnancy, or, places that help women who have had abortions, like Project Rachel. And
right,
this really should be an included aspect of any pro-life ministry at any parish. But
we think so. We have found that when the mothers have been identified, the demographics are anybody of childbearing years. The youngest mother was 13. The oldest was 46.
Wow.
They go across all demographic barriers.
Yeah.
So there, it's not, one particular type of person, but we find that it's usually a hidden pregnancy, and that pregnancy might have been shared with one best friend.
Okay.
So if that best friend doesn't know the answer, they don't know that the safe haven law exists,
right,
how could the mother in crisis ever use it?
Right.
So we need those good kids. We need them to know about this law and about that it works when people know about
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah. Obviously. And I guess what I think, if I had to guess, at the one concern a new mom might have in using this law is that, so say, for example, I walk in with a baby. I am going to be asked questions. I am, our staff well-trained, have police and fire departments and college security officers been well-trained?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they have been. And there are even mothers in the area that have told their stories. One of the women from the Save Abandoned Babies Foundation, her name is Christy Hack.
Mm-hmm.
She is a parishioner at St. Walter's.
Okay.
She is a safe haven mom. Her
wow.
little baby Trinity just turned 3.
Okay.
And Trinity was left at a firehouse in
okay.
DeKalb.
All right.
And became part of the Hack family just 2 days later. And they still go back and visit those firefighters that saved Trinity's life.
So she is the mother of a child. She adopted the child.
Yes.
Who was, okay. But
yep.
just from the, and that's wonderful to know, too, that these children don't go into the foster care system.
That's correct.
They immediately go into forever families who care for them. Because I think, too, for some moms, I think unfairly, some of the foster care systems in our country, are perceived by a lot of people as not being good places for children. I think you certainly see in the newspapers stories of children in foster care being abused or neglected. And I think that might be a real fear for
right.
some moms. I remember when I worked for many years doing Project Rachel work, which is the Catholic Church's post-abortion ministry. And, you would counsel women and talk to them about what led up to their abortion decision. And, even if you would say, did you ever consider adoption? And, the answers would range from, oh, no, I couldn't do that. That would be cruel, because they go into these foster homes and then they get abused and neglected. And it was actually a kinder thing for me to do to have this abortion than it would have been to
oh,
do
my.
That. Which is so, the myths that are out there about either foster care or adoption, I really think kind of need to address, be addressed sort of simultaneously. But at any rate, that's good to know. I do think from the mom's perspective, you wonder, is she really afraid? Like when I walk in there, will they actually ask me questions? I mean, how can I just hand a baby to somebody and walk away? But that's how the law works.
Yes, that's how the law works. And so one of the little slogans is no names, no blame, no shame. That this is something that is available to any parent in crisis to help end the crisis, but yet keep this baby happy, healthy, and alive.
Right. So to, you want to, when you're faced with a crisis pregnancy, you eliminate the crisis, you don't eliminate the child.
Correct.
And that's the distinction that we would make. And, to know that there are organizations like yours out there promoting the Safe Haven Law. Is there sort of an annual statewide sort of Safe Haven Law Day or?
Yes. We get the entire month of April.
Okay. Excellent.
Yes. Baby Safe Haven Awareness.
Okay.
Yes.
That's very important to know. And is there a particular event or something around the Safe Haven Law that you would want listeners to know about, ways in which they can support broadening public awareness of Safe Haven?
You know, I think it really is just engaging in conversations. The teenagers that are required to hear this information in the public school system are bombarded with a million different messages mm-hmm. every single day. So it's one to keep having the conversation with them. We do work very closely with Save Abandoned Babies, and we have T-shirts that we offer, too. So if you were to go to our Facebook page, there's mm-hmm. a link to the T-shirts.
Okay. And again, your Facebook page is?
It is Rest in His Arms.
Rest in His Arms mm-hmm. On yes, Facebook.com. Facebook. Right. Well, we are going to go into our final break now. And when we return, we will continue our conversation with Susan Walker of Rest in His Arms Ministries. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration on Sunday, December 10th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Then, on Tuesday, December 12th, on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, starting early at 5 a.m., Mañanitas, the serenading of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Then, at 7 p.m., there will be a special Mass in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Following the Mass, the celebration will continue in the St. Stanislaus Kostka School Gym at 1255 North Noble Street. There will be a folklore and Aztec dance presentation, as well as the presentation of the story of the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, of course, there'll be food for sale. Tamales, pozole, sopes, Mexican-style hot chocolate, and much, much more. The funds raised will benefit St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. That's Saturday, December 10th. St. Stan's is located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join in our celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, two blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. I have been joined today by Susan Walker, who is the president and the founder of Rest in His Arms Ministry, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that provides funerals and burial services to abandoned children, mostly infants and toddlers. So we have been talking about how the funerals themselves happen, how the community comes together to provide all of the necessities to have a dignified and beautiful and memorable funeral. But one of the things we haven't talked about is, what do you bury the babies in?
Yes, thank you for asking. That was one of my initial concerns, even back with baby Michael. He needed some kind of burial garment. And at that time, I searched the internet and I found a woman in Maine who made baptism gowns that she said she could adjust and make into a burial outfit for me. So she did that and shipped it over. And then when I said, well, now we have baby David and Rosa and I need two more, she said, okay, I'll do that for you. And one of my friends said, would she be able to make it out of my wedding dress? I will ship my wedding dress to Maine if she could make these burial garments out of that.
So this is a seamstress who was making gowns for baptisms for living babies.
Right.
Out of wedding gowns.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So we did that. And then with the next funerals that came up, we had the same friend have her sister and some other friends from work ship their wedding dresses to Maine. And the seamstress is wonderful and just terrific. And she said, you know, I'll keep doing this for you as long as you need them, but you're in Chicago. Certainly there are seamstresses in Chicago that can help you with this.
Right.
And so I started asking that question, and I found a number of seamstresses at my parish and at neighboring parishes mm-hmm. and in the community. And so now we also have Rest in His Arms angel gowns, and we have taken wedding dresses and made them into burial garments, not only for my babies, for the babies that we take care of, but these are gowns that are available to any grieving family that has lost a child,
okay,
whether there was a miscarriage or a stillbirth or any type of infant loss.
Oh, that's beautiful. So you've really expanded the ministry beyond
yes.
children who die to provide services for families that, you know, are already grappling with the death of a child that they expected to live, and probably the last thing on their mind is what I'm going to bury this child in.
Yes. So we make little tiny micro preemie size all the way up to what would be a full-term size gown. They're made for boys or for girls. There's some that are gender neutral. Mm-hmm. But we also make little pouches when there's the tiniest little babies that are maybe too fragile to dress, that they can go into a little pouch and be wrapped up, and Mama can still hold her baby that way and can bury her baby in something absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's, I can't tell you the gift that that must be to families who have experienced that kind of, you know, perinatal loss. And I'm a little bit familiar with something called perinatal hospice, which is essentially hospice for children who receive an adverse diagnosis while they're still waiting to be born. And so I have three friends, actually, who have lost children, and one of whom, you know, it was interesting because she was counseled very heavily to abort her daughter, and she absolutely did not want to. And she said she had to really go and do the research, but she found out about, you know, perinatal hospice and what a gift it was to her family and how they were able to prepare for her daughter's death. And someone did bring them a baptismal gown. She lived about 6 hours, but they were able to dress her in the gown and they were able to baptize her.
Take some pictures.
And she died in her father's arms. You know, she said, I will always have that image of, you know, us, our family, her grandparents held her and sang to her. You know, for the 6 hours that she was alive ex utero, she was loved. And having that gown, I remember her very clearly saying that to me, having that made, you know, it was one less thing for the family to have to go out and do and figure out, like, how do you get one that's so small, et cetera, et cetera. And then she was buried in it as well. So that's, if
yes.
people want to get involved in that particular aspect of your ministry. So again, these are gowns that are used not only for the children whose bodies you bury, but also that are abandoned. These are also for any family.
We donate them to local hospitals. We've actually donated them to hospitals all across the United States. Mm. Some of our gowns went on a mission trip to Peru this summer.
Oh, that's
so
beautiful.
That was really wonderful to be able to.
How many gowns in an average year do you are made?
Thousands. Yes. We can usually get about 20 gowns from one wedding dress.
Mm-hmm.
So our seamstress is
hard
to work.
Right. Well, it sounds like it. So, I mean, this to me is, I mean, what a wonderful opportunity, particularly if you have someone who has gifts in sewing. I do not. So don't ask me after the show because I would not be a good helper to you. But I know people who do. And like, so, you know, particularly people who may be homebound.
Yes.
Who might have those gifts. How would someone like that get involved in helping you make gowns?
We would love some additional seamstresses, and there's actually work to be done for those who don't sew. So anybody with teenagers looking for confirmation service hours, they can come help. We need to trace the patterns. We cut open the wedding dresses and trace the patterns and cut them out. So there's work that can be done by those who don't sew as well.
Yes. No, that is excellent because, you know, just this morning I was speaking with someone whose daughter is a sophomore at a Catholic high school and has to forgive 20 hours of service.
We'd love her help.
Well, you know, and what's interesting is the school requires that the student perform all of the service hours at the same location. So they, you know, they don't want them doing an hour here and an hour there. They want them to make one commitment to one organization and really stay with that organization. So they get a sense of what they do. So this sounds like this could be a perfect opportunity for, you know, campus ministry.
That would be terrific.
Offices. Well, I will pass that along. And then tell me about where you get the wedding gown. Because not every woman, my guess is, would want to part with her gown.
That's correct. But they do come from all over the country. We have people donating gowns. We're very grateful. We just ask that the gowns be clean.
And then we
can use them. And most of the gowns can be washed on the gentle cycle in the washing machine. It's no problem. Hung up to dry.
And do you accept any kind of material? Just about.
It's hard to use the stretchy jersey material from the 60s and 70s. That's difficult to use.
Okay.
But just about any other type of material can be used.
Okay, so you can use like a polyester satin as opposed to a real satin. You can use any of those. You can
right.
do. I mean, that's... you know, that is a remarkable gift to any family who has experienced an infant loss. Do you have any stories? Have families, you know, come back to you? And
yes.
You must. I'm looking at your face, and it's saying I have thousands of stories. I want to hear one or two because I want to end. You know, this has been such such a beautiful conversation. I can't thank you again enough for sharing your time with me today. But I want to leave on a kind of an uplifting note.
Oh, good.
I mean, tell us stories of hope that have come out of this work, because I think sometimes people would say, how on earth does this, you know, how on earth does this woman do this? This has got to be so depressing. But you're not a depressed person. You're very joyful.
I think part of that is because it's not me. This isn't me doing this work. I'm doing what I'm told to do. Earlier in the segment, you compared this work to that of the great saints.
Mm-hmm.
I think my friends and family can attest I'm not a saint. I'm just somebody who felt they were supposed to do something and said yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it takes.
Well, that's how it always
that's
starts,
all
right?
It requires of any of us. Just say
well,
yes,
right.
And God puts everything in our path. He just makes it work.
Yeah. Well, tell me about I want to hear about someone whose life you touched with one of these angel gowns.
I have been connected to a group on Facebook called Mommy's Two Little Saints.
Mm.
And it's women that have lost children and have been able to send gowns to them. But one was a mom that was here in the Chicago suburbs who lost a baby over Labor Day weekend. And she couldn't find a contact. She couldn't make contact. So it was through a friend of that group that connected her to us. And I was able to go meet her at Woodfield Mall.
Oh.
And I was able to give her her choice of gowns and just sit and cry and mourn with her and pray with her and grieve with her and talk to her about her baby and see the pictures and be able to share that experience with her. And it was really beautiful. It was you know, one of those moments of Mary and Elizabeth and just women ministering to women that had been so beautiful.
And that's, you know, it used to be my mom lost a baby at about 7.5 months or so. And, you know, she didn't talk about it for many years. And she just said in those days in the 60s that you just came home and no one said anything to you and you just were expected not to mention it. And it was impolite to mention stillborns or miscarriages. And now we have, you know, we better understand infant loss and the real trauma that infant loss causes, not just to the mother, but to the father and to, you know, other siblings or grandparents. And, you know, it used to be, again, this thing that people were very hesitant to bring up. If you know someone who has lost, how would you recommend, if you say, have you have a friend or a neighbor who you realize had an infant loss and you saw them pregnant and then a couple months later, there's no baby. What would you recommend doing in those kind of circumstances? Because I think sometimes people, it's not badly intended. They don't want to, they're afraid they might bring up something that's painful.
Right.
They don't want to upset the person. So they just say nothing because, you know, they're afraid of causing more grief.
It's better to say something, say anything rather than to say nothing. Acknowledge that baby existed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it means the world to these mothers that somebody says, I'm so sorry for your loss. And is there anything I can do? Especially if that mother has other little ones at home, bringing over dinner for her would be a tremendous gift and something that would really help as she's grieving, that just somebody else recognized that there was a life there and she lost it.
Yeah. And because I do think, and again, I don't think it's people have bad intentions. I just think there's such an awkwardness. And, you know, especially if it's someone you don't know particularly well, you don't want to be intrusive. And certainly you don't want to do anything or say anything that causes a person additional grief. So, but to simply, you know, make sure that if the moment presents itself, you try to be right. And, you know, when I have a friend who had twins and one child had an extremely serious adverse diagnosis and her son was fine. And so I remember when they were born, you know, the baby died her daughter died a few hours after they were both born. And then her son was, you know, happy and beautiful. And that was, and I remember just like being paralyzed with, you know, doubt. I didn't know what to do. Do you send her congratulations? Do you send, you know, and she said the most beautiful response she had was from, she was very involved in the pro-life movement, was from another organization in the pro-life community who sent her a dozen yellow roses and a dozen white roses.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah, one for each baby. And she said, you know, it was the perfect note, she said, because obviously we were overjoyed with our son. It was our first child. He was, you know, beautiful and healthy, right. And we were grateful that he made it through a very, very difficult pregnancy. And but by the same token, 2 days after that, we were going to bury our daughter. And you know, that's another thing that she had really made me very sensitive to was infant organ donation. And I think sometimes that kind of information, in the same way so few know about Safe Haven, don't realize that you know, there can be a potential for giving life, even if a baby is born sick or disabled. So, well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Susan Walker at Rest in His Arms Ministry. You can find her on Facebook or on her website. I'd invite you to learn more about the beautiful work that she is doing, to keep her in your prayers, and to make a donation to her ministry if you are able to do so. This has been Mary Fiorito. Thank you for joining me here today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
No sense to research deeper truths or sit on the fence. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? The winds have changed. We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.